Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by always as Matt, and we are recording here on a Wednesday the 13th, and that's about it. I'm just glad we're back on a normal schedule. There's about a month and a half where we were kind of all over the place, but we're back to the kind of once a week thing recording-wise.
Yeah, that once a week between Monday and Wednesday, we're settled in a little bit more, so which is nice. You're not traveling the Western United States quite so much anymore.
Unfortunately.
Have to go back to a job and be a real person.
Again, unfortunately. I really miss that unemployment grind I was on.
Yeah. I know. It's the dream. Yeah. Like in the summer, I was loving the summer. Just not having anything to do was fantastic.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, yesterday was nice for me. I had to go to work, which sucked. But then I went to the Lakers-Suns game here in Phoenix. First time I saw LeBron play. He was very big.
Yes.
Kyle Kuzma went off. And it was my fourth Suns game of the year. I think I should just get season tickets at this point because I like somehow keep going to games.
Yeah, that is a lot of times to see the Suns play. Like, that's more than I ever want to see the Suns play.
I need to take a break for sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're good. I mean, the Jazz are good. You know, the Lakers are good. So, I mean, if you're seeing somebody good, then, you know. Who are the other two games against?
So one game was against the Kings. That was the first game of the year, so I thought the Kings were going to be better. But De'Aaron Fox was good. And then the other game was against the Miami Heat. And Jimmy Butler is very – those were the best seats I had of the four games. Jimmy Butler was very good. Dragic went off in the game for Miami. That was the only game that wasn't really close. Miami won by like 20-something. The other games have all been pretty close, so it's been fun.
Yeah. Dude, Jimmy Butler, I mean, I feel like, you know, me and you have more positive things, think higher of him than most people do, but he has been just really killing it this season.
Yeah, he's been great. And I think we both said Miami, I think I had him at third, but I think we both had him in the top four or five in the West, the East, so... That is looking good so far. Miami's crushing it. Boston is doing well as well. We're going to talk about the NBA, but we're going to start with Houston Astros, the whole sign-stealing thing, and then we'll go NBA. We did want to mention really quick, though, the Seattle Sounders played the Toronto FC in the MLS Cup for the third time in 4 years. Seattle won 3-1, so that's their second trophy. And I did not watch the game because I was watching football. But, Matt, what are your thoughts? Seattle won again. Here's my thought on the whole thing. Seattle's general manager, Garth Lagerwey, is the best general manager in MLS, is my opinion on the championship.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say. You know, he certainly... and doesn't have as flashy a team as, say, L.A. or Atlanta. And, you know, Seattle, I think, has plenty of money. I don't know if they have as much money as either of those teams do. But, yeah, like you said, he's just a very good general manager. He knows the right kind of players to bring in. He knows how to, you know, fit everybody together, make sure the chemistry's going to work well with the coach. And, you know, yeah, like you just don't play in three MLS Cups in 4 years by accident, particularly when you don't necessarily have the most talented roster. And I did not pick Seattle to come out of the Western Conference. I had LAFC, like basically everybody, although I did say on this podcast that I thought Seattle was the biggest threat to LAFC just because they are always able to turn it on and get really, really hot at the end of the year, and they were getting really hot at the end of the year this year again. And so I said if anybody was going to beat them, it was Seattle. So I don't think that necessarily counts as calling it. But, yeah, I just continue to be impressed with them and being able to peak at the right time.
Yeah, so good for them as an objective. And then I would love to see some besides Seattle and Toronto making MLS Cup. So we'll see what happens next year. A lot of, honestly, more and more, the MLS, I am impressed at its growth, how big it is. The MLS Cup was on ABC. It's really a 12-month season. Like, not, obviously, it's never going to be as big as the NFL or the NBA, but it's really grown a tremendous amount from where it started at. So kudos to MLS. And then they're getting a new team in Charlotte. But Matt, should we talk baseball for probably the last time of the year 2019?
We should, but are you sure it's Charlotte? Did you mean Nashville?
No, I thought it was Charlotte, which surprised me.
Okay, so Charlotte is the front runner for the league's 30th team. So Nashville is going to have a team, I'm pretty sure, next year is going to be their inaugural season. I assume if Charlotte does end up getting the spot, that it's going to take them till, 2022 or so. But yeah, that does surprise, because I haven't heard anything about them, actually. So that's good for them.
I hadn't heard Charlotte till like this week.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, I just looked up Nashville's logo. Do not like it.
You want to talk about a bad logo. In minor league baseball, which is why everyone tunes into the show, the Wichita Wind Surge is, I couldn't tell if that was the new name of the team or just the new logo for the Wind Surge that already existed. But, man, people in marketing in minor league baseball are just some of the toughest people. Hardworking, salt of the earth kind of people, because that's like an impossible job.
That is so much for a logo. There's so much going on. So first off, you say Wichita Wind Surge, and you have the W, and you have the mascot, which is apparently a Pegasus, which is just way too much to put on a thing. And I understand on the hat they'll probably put the W just with a Pegasus, but that, man, you are bold coming out with Pegasus.
Yeah, so that's our minor league baseball update, which no one else is bringing you minor league baseball coverage like we do here. So remember to subscribe, rate, and review anywhere you get your podcast. Should we bump it up to the majors, Matt?
Let's go to the majors. I have been very interested in the story, but I have not had time to read up on it. So
here's what's going on in the majors. This is not what we're talking about, but I do want to mention the San Francisco Giants hired Gabe Kapler as their manager, fired from the Phillies, had almost exactly a 500 record after 2 years. So we'll see what happens there. But here's the big story, Matt. Houston Astros, who have just had the worst month possible. Has anyone had a worse month than Houston in terms of, I feel like early October they were the underdog, the people's team, and now everyone hates them between what went on in the locker room with the assistant general manager, that report from Sports Illustrated, and then now the sign-stealing thing. Is this the worst month in sports from a PR perspective?
It's got to be, because you're right. It is odd when the whole country's rooting for a team that isn't really an underdog, and like I'm sure some people did, sort of view them like that, but they were probably the best team in baseball, or at least one of them. I certainly wouldn't call them an underdog. So for the whole country to like Houston as much as they had is really, really rare, especially for baseball. The baseball's not really a sport that the nation is going to pay attention to. So yeah, no, and I don't think there's any Astros fans who don't live in Houston anymore.
Yeah, so I don't know if we talked about this, but quickly, a reporter, after the Astros won the ALCS, just for context, there were three female reporters. One of them had a bracelet, and I believe it was color purple, correct me if I'm wrong, but an anti-domestic violence bracelet, which is really the most, I should say, the least controversial bracelet possible, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, that and cancer, right?
Yeah, it's like she had an anti-domestic violence bracelet, not a controversial thing at all. And then the assistant general manager for the Astros, unprompted, nothing to do with them, he came over and started yelling, "Thank bleeping goodness we got this closer," who the closer came over from the Blue Jays. The Astros traded for him at a discount because he was going through domestic violence allegations. And well, I don't get, was in the game, the closer blew a 2-run lead. So the Astros ended up winning, but the closer screwed up. So that's not the important part of the story, but I don't get why he was so happy the closer was on the team. But yeah, so the guy goes over like in the reporter's faces, threateningly, like kind of rubbing it in that, haha, we got this guy. And then the Astros tried to pretend that the reporter fabricated the story. And then literally everyone in the locker room was like, no, the Astros are lying here. So, and that was right during the World Series. So they look terrible from a PR perspective from that standpoint. They end up losing the World Series to Washington Nationals. People kind of forget about baseball. And then this story comes out because three former Astro players plus a pitcher who currently plays for Oakland but played for the Astros in 2017 said that the Astros in 2017 set a camera up in the outfield that relayed to a screen, a monitor, like an iPad that they put in their like hallway on the way to the dugout. And then other player, like Astros players and coaches would sit on massage tables across from that and try to decode the signs from the other pitchers. And then let's say like a changeup was coming, they would like swing or hit a trash can super loud. So if the batter heard that, they knew it was like a changeup or a breaking ball or whatever that code was. And it's a huge deal because it's one thing to steal a sign if you're like second base and you can like literally see the catcher. I think like that's like in football, if you know what route the receiver's going to run, the corner's going to jump that. That's one thing. I think, you know, that's kind of gamesmanship. I'm not in the MLB, so I don't know where exactly that falls. But the issue is using technology to decode and steal signs. That's where everybody's freaking out. And this has been a problem before. In 2018, the Red Sox accused the Astros of sending someone to the Red Sox dugout to try to set up a camera, and then baseball didn't accuse or like find anything wrong with what the Astros were doing. But pretty much everyone in baseball saw the Astros have been doing this. And then this is just officially from actual players saying, yeah, this is how they did it. And they literally set up a whole intricate system with cameras and everything to do that. And it's kind of crazy, Matt. Like just that someone, they would actually go to those lengths to do that. And in 2017, that was the year they won the World Series.
Right. Yeah, that is. It's weird that people, if like they banged a trash can every time that there was a changeup or whatever, that the catcher or the pitcher didn't like catch on from the other team. You know what I mean? Like, I guess you said it sounds like there were some people who accused them, but they maybe couldn't really do anything about it. But it is, you would think that with technology that Major League Baseball would be able to tell what is going on the Wi-Fi in the stadium, particularly through the dugouts.
Yeah, and the one instance where someone actually did catch on to it was a White Sox pitcher. He threw two changeups and he heard that sound twice. So the third time he was about to throw a changeup, but then he stepped off the mound. Because he's like, okay, this is, like, what's going on? So he called the catcher over, and when someone's on second base, the team goes to more, like, intricate hand signals instead of, like, the one or the two or whatever. So they had to go to that because they knew, they didn't know how, but they could tell the Astros were somehow sign-stealing. So it's going to be interesting to see what Major League Baseball does. They're not going to, like, take away the World Series championship or anything like that, but it'll be interesting to see if there's, like, fines, suspensions. And the general manager for the Astros just having a heck of a month, a heck of a 30 calendar day period. You know what I mean?
Right. It is. Yeah. No. And I understand why you can't take away a championship, particularly if it's not performance enhancing drug. That's just really hard to do. So I don't know if there's any precedent for this, seeing the way that, you know, like I know the Patriots lost draft picks and got suspensions. I don't know who you suspend for this if it's not the general manager trying to get the coach fired. You got to think that losing draft picks would be the most logical punishment for this. And I don't know how big of a deal draft picks are in baseball compared to say football or the NBA. But
yeah, it's weird, and this is just a minor thing, but it's weird how, like, in baseball to football to basketball, the trades with draft pick compensation is so different. Because in baseball, you know, you almost really never trade draft picks. The only exchanging of draft picks that really goes on is if, let's say, a player, a free agent, let's say, hypothetically, the Atlanta Braves offer a player a qualifying offer and that player doesn't sign it, then if, let's say, the Washington Nationals sign that player, then they have to give up an X round pick because the Braves extended that qualifying offer. So sometimes teams don't want to sign players as much because they have to get the player plus they lose a draft pick. But most of the trades have to do with prospects already on the team. So it's up to the players to draft well. In the NBA, you know, people trade second round picks like they're nothing. It's the first round picks that are super valuable in acquiring superstars. And the NFL, a lot of the draft trading happens on game night, but during the, or excuse me, draft night, where they'll trade up and down. But during the season, like if you're trading like a running back or like a defensive end or something, you're getting like a, at best, probably a second round pick. There's not a lot of trades, especially mid season, that involve a first round pick to the point where I can't think of one. I'm sure there is one that I'm missing, but I can't think of one mid season where an NFL team gave up a first round pick for a player.
Right. Yeah, no, it's, yeah, it is. I mean, and with the NBA, I've been thinking about this because I think now it's almost hard to do a trade to get a big player without two first round draft picks. Now, if in that sense, they're like less valuable than they had be, but now I think they're kind of being undervalued in trades. Like the Jazz, for example, had to give up two first round draft picks for Mike Conley. And I was very disappointed that we had to do that with everything else that we were giving up. One, I feel like would have been okay, but two, that is a lot for a 32-year-old point guard.
Yeah, it is, and especially the one that's deferred to like 2020 or 2021, that could be really bad for Utah, good for Memphis, because that is the year where hypothetically high school players are going to be able to go pro immediately, so it's going to be like double the draft class full of prospects. So
right, I feel bad for like the college seniors who aren't going to get drafted because of the high school kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and then I'm going to be interested the next year because really the top players from two classes are already gone, so that next draft will be interesting to see how teams treat trades in that draft. And honestly, nothing's for certain because it depends on the new NBA collective bargaining agreement that hasn't happened anyway, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even think about the draft after.
Yeah, so we're always thinking here. And while we're here, let's just stay on the NBA, Matt. Let's talk about the NBA. Where do we want to start? Let's start with Phoenix just because I already went to those four games. They're 6-4, and I think we talked about this a little bit last week. I don't think that's going to last. And because Timberwolves are in eighth place, I don't think that's going to last. What's really surprising is Portland is down at 4-7. I don't want to think that'll last. I want to think Portland will get back up. But I am getting worried about Portland.
I know. Well, it's weird. And I'm looking at it, and I don't want to say that the Suns, you know, stay up there, or the Timberwolves, or really the Mavericks, I don't think I had in the playoffs. The problem is I'm looking down the list, and I see, you know, Portland, I think, almost certainly is going to come up. The Spurs, I would be surprised if they don't come up. But at the same time, you know, somebody like the Mavericks, I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up being ahead of the Spurs. But, yeah, like the Kings aren't going to be as good as we thought. The Warriors dropped out. That opens up another spot. You know, I think the Thunder are good. I don't know if they're going to be good enough for the playoffs. I feel like, especially if they end up trading Chris Paul at the trade deadline. So I think the West, like that top, you know, those top five teams, I think are, you know, clearly going to be above everybody else. But that bottom is a lot more open than I think we originally thought it was going to be.
Well, yeah, because as of this recording, the Pelicans, who everyone thought would be a borderline playoff team, obviously Zion Williamson is hurt. They're in 14th place out of 15. The Warriors are in last place at 2-9, and the Grizzlies are at 13th. They're 3-7, so they're only one or two games ahead. I think the Grizzlies will probably end up being last. The reason I think the Suns are going to drop is because Aaron Baines has been playing spectacular in terms of PR and other advanced stats like that. That's going to drop off. Like the Suns, as a Suns expert who's been to almost all their home games that I can think of and watches no other Suns content whatsoever, you know, their problem for so long was point guard, and they have an actual point guard in Ricky Rubio, who I think is middle tier point guard in that somewhere in the like 13 to 18 range of point guards in the NBA, just off the top of my head. His only thing is he can't shoot, but that hasn't been as big of an issue because of what he's been able to do in terms of generating offense, initiating the offense so Booker can play off the ball, getting their wing guys like Mikal Bridges. He's I think he's been having a great year in terms of efficiency, like getting to spots this year as opposed to last year's rookie year. And Cam Johnson, the rookie from North Carolina, who I love Cam Johnson, love North Carolina, went higher than people expected. So that was interesting on draft night, but he's been progressing as the season's gone on. But what I was saying about Ricky Rubio is I think that's the biggest area of improvement is the Suns, is it allows Devin Booker to do so much more off the ball that they can actually have someone who handles the ball. I still think they're going to finish below 500 and out of the playoff race, but kudos to them. They haven't had anything to cheer for in years, so they're actually getting a over 500 start. So shout out to them.
Yeah. I know it is nice. I'm happy for Rubio. You know, that was kind of a bummer that he did have to leave the Jazz, but I think it ends up being best for both parties, because I think if you look at, you know, putting him next to Donovan Mitchell or putting him next to Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, I think, is at his best when he's, you know, when he's driving to the hoop, when he's slashing. And so to have him on the floor with Ricky Rubio, it was really easy for Ricky Rubio's guy to come off and bring some extra help in the paint, not to mention Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors' men. And so now, you know, with Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell's got a ton more room. With the Suns, you know, Devin Booker, he can go to the hoop as well. But if I've got Devin Booker on my team, I want him to shoot as many threes as possible. So it's not that big of a deal if Ricky Rubio's guy is going to give him room on the paint, because we're really, if anything, that gives Devin Booker more room on the outside.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I think they fall off. The Mavericks, I think, are going to be up there. Luka Doncic. I will never understand, Matt. Again, Trae Young's having an unbelievable year. DeAndre Ayton is not hurt, but suspended in Phoenix. But even with Trae Young being as good as he is, Jaren Jackson's playing good in Memphis so far. Never in my life will I understand why Luka Doncic wasn't the most consensus number one overall pick in NBA history. Except for maybe LeBron.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And what's really weird about it to me still is you go and you hire Igor Kokoskov and you say, we think you have a great basketball mind. We want you to coach our team. And then he says, great. I was a national coach for Slovenia or whatever Eastern European country. This Luka Doncic kid is a real deal. I want to draft him. And they say, great, we're going to draft this guy named DeAndre Ayton.
That's why the whole hire of Kokoskov, Igor Kokoskov, like, it was just doomed from the start, because you could tell it wasn't really his team. He was just the guy that somebody had to be the head coach, but Robert Sarver, the owner, really wasn't buying in to Kokoskov like he is Monty Williams so far,
right,
early into the year.
Which, by the way, is fine if you don't buy into Igor Kokoskov. That's okay. I think he's a good coach, but if you don't think he's a good coach, that's fine. But why did you hire him?
They hired him. They didn't let him, you know, do what he was good at in terms of personnel decisions. And, yeah, he coached Luka Doncic and Goran Dragic on the Slovenian national team. Incredibly respected around NBA circles as a good head coach. And I just know, unless it's a very rare circumstance, we've talked about in the NFL, Freddie Kitchens and Jim Tomsula, 1 year was enough there. I can't think of a time in the NBA where I thought this guy needs to go after a year. And no matter college, NFL, what can you really do in a year with the Suns roster? Like the Knicks, this is David Fizdale's his second or third year there, so it's not the same situation. But if they fire him, the general manager should be fired as well, because he's the one that put together the roster of 19 power forwards and zero shooting guards. Like, what is David Fizdale supposed to do with that? What was Igor Kokoskov supposed to do with Phoenix's roster last season?
Is there anybody in the world besides James Dolan who thinks that Fizdale is the problem with the Knicks?
Not.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't believe there's anybody who looks at the Knicks and is like, the coach is the problem here.
Yeah, I honestly don't get it. I didn't even think Fizdo was a fantastic hire, but you cannot blame this on Fizdale, what the Knicks are going through. Let's check the Eastern Conference standings. We'll just say we've had some nice segues today. Matt, the Knicks are 2-9, worst record in the East, tied for Warriors for worst record in the league. That is a sentence. The Knicks and the Warriors are tied for last place in the NBA. Here's a stat I saw on the social media yesterday, Matt. In the last 14 months, the New England Patriots have more wins than the New York Knicks.
14 months?
Yeah. So I don't know what, I'm sure that just goes back to the start of 2018 football season.
Oh my gosh, the Knicks were so much worse last year than I thought they were.
Yeah, they're not bueno.
There are 82 games in an NBA season.
Yeah.
That, oh my goodness. Are the Knicks a bigger joke than the Browns?
Well, the Browns seem to be cursed. The Knicks are just dysfunctional. I literally think, like, if the Browns aren't good this year, besides Freddie Kitchens, I can't figure out why. So I think it is because the Knicks just literally are dysfunctional. They asked Kevin Durant to take a pay cut, which if you look at it from the perspective of, you know, he's coming off an injury, like the extra money will help us get Kyrie or whatever, then you can like make a defense against it. But you shouldn't be looking at it from that perspective. You should be looking at it from we're the New York Knicks. We haven't been good in forever. He's Kevin Durant. Like, why would they be in a position to ask for a pay cut and not the max for Kevin Durant?
I feel so bad for Knicks fans.
And remember, in the summer, they traded Kristaps Porzingis for cap space because they were sure they were going to sign Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And, you know, I get gambling, but now Kristaps Porzingis is in Dallas, and you're playing with Markieff Morris and Julius Randle plays on the Knicks. Literally, it's like only power forwards there.
Right. And you know what they did to fix that problem?
What?
They took all their power forwards and they gave them 2-year contracts, and then they told their fan base, it's okay. These guys will be out of their contracts in 2021, and then we're going to bring in a couple of big-name free agents when you just struck out again.
I think the benefit of playing in New York, because before New York was the actual city, if we're talking big picture, is really the capital of the world. But Victor Oladipo plays in Indiana and is sponsored by Jordan. You know what I mean? Donovan Mitchell plays in Salt Lake City and has his own signature shoe. Nikola Jokic plays in Denver, and he's an MVP, a perennial. And perennial is strong because it's only been probably a couple years, but he's an MVP candidate, easily considered a top 10 player in the world. Because of social media and the internet and just how small the world has become, playing in New York isn't the same thing as it was playing in the 80s in New York. So they keep relying on we're the Knicks with all this history. No one in the NBA was alive when the Knicks were any good. I don't even know if we were alive when the Knicks were any good. And we're, I guess, younger NBA players are younger than us, but we're a veteran NBA player's age.
Yeah. So one thing, so we saw the Jazz play the Knicks, and it was the worst I've ever seen one team beat another live. I'm sure there have been worse beatdowns, but that was just a huge gap. And I remember, I don't know if you heard this, but there was a guy next to us, and he came in and he looked over at us and he pointed at this, I believe it was 1979, the last time the Knicks won a championship. I'm going to look it up right now. But what he pointed that banner and he says, I haven't been back to Madison Square Garden since the Knicks won that championship. And I was like, well, okay, 1973, so even older. I was like, well, things have changed here. It is different. Why do people like the Knicks? They've only won 2 championships ever. Like, why are the Knicks a thing? I know they're in New York, but the Nets are in New York, and they were in New Jersey before, and I know that New Jersey isn't New York, but like, they're so bad. And they should be so good. They should be so much better than everybody else.
It's just because of the ownership. That's honestly what it is. Like, it's just the ownership. Like, the fan got kicked out last week for chanting, fire James Dolan. And Yeah, I'm sure it's annoying if you're James Dolan to have literally the entire city hate you. But guess what? You own the Knicks. You don't get to be mad because you have that much money. And if you sold them, think how much more money you'd have. And then no one would hate you. I'd rather have the extra $3 billion and no one hating me than owning the Knicks. Just buy season tickets, dude. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the entire city hates you. And every Knicks fan, which I think there are more around the world, just... Because it's obvious. Like, no other owner gets talked about as much as James Dolan, because it's... No other owner in the NBA is so dysfunctional and so painstakingly just impatient and bad at his job. The Knicks had a press conference this week where the GM came out and was like, we're disappointed in the way the season's gone. And that was because the same game where the fan was chanting, fire James Dolan, James Dolan met with the general manager, Steve Mills, and said, you need to go out and express disappointment in the season. He just does everything to deflect blame. Nothing's ever his fault. And if they fire David Fizdale, then I don't know what to do. And he doesn't care about the Knicks whatsoever.
Yeah, like, they are so dysfunctional that it makes me angry, and I couldn't care less about the Knicks.
Yeah, literally zero preference. Don't love them, don't hate them. Like, Madison Square Garden's cool. Zero whatever for the Knicks.
Is Madison Square Garden cool? Like, I didn't think it was that great. Like, the location is cool. I wasn't particularly impressed with the arena.
Did you like Madison Square Garden or TD Garden better?
TD Garden better, not even close.
Go into depth. Because I don't know. It was cool just being in Madison Square Garden, you know what I mean? But TD Garden, I like, because it's like up the stairs, because it's literally in a train station, so you have to go up the stairs to get to it. Or escalator or whatever.
Yeah, just, I don't, like, it felt more like you were in, like, it felt more like a bowl, and I did, like, that feeling of being up above, and Madison Square Garden, by the way, also above a subway station, but it's sitting, you know, on ground level, and it, like, I don't know, you had to go higher up to go into TD Garden. I feel like the Celtics had much better production value with, like, their pregame and introducing the players and stuff. There was a much better environment outside with all the Celtics fans and, you know, selling all those cheap shirts, you know, for like $5 and stuff. I thought that was really cool. I thought the Celtics fans were much more interested than the Knicks fans. Obviously, we went to this when, like, 2011, so like Paul Pierce and Rondo were still there and stuff. And then the Knicks are the Knicks. And so I don't know. And it felt like what you said, the Knicks are still relying on the Knicks. I felt like Madison Square Garden was like, oh, we're Madison Square Garden, so we don't need to do anything. And it just, like, did you notice that outside, like, everything was just, like, tan? Like, did you note, like, the halls and, like, the restaurants and stuff? It was just tan?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that bugged me. I thought TD Garden, it was very colorful. They used green. They used yellow. You know, I thought the actual stands inside were more interesting to look at. Like all the food vendor places in Madison Square Garden, I didn't feel like there were any attractive signs. And so, like, it was hard to tell, like, what everything was. It was literally just, like, tan signs and, like, white and black letters. Like, it was the most boring place I've ever been to, and it was Madison Square Garden.
TD Garden was cool, in Mass Defense, to say that.
I know, and I know this is maybe a hot take, because it's supposed to be like the best arena in the world, but I guess, I don't know, maybe for someone who's 27, which is not young, and the Knicks have just always been bad, that it doesn't carry the same weight as it does for somebody who saw it in the 80s or the 90s.
Do we know why? Because, again, we talked about, like, the Knicks not being good. The Celtics were way better during that time, when even the Knicks, you could argue, were good. Why isn't TD Garden, like, the mecca? Like, is it just because it's in New York? Because in that case, the Staples Center should be now.
Right. I mean, I don't know. The Staples Center is new, so it doesn't have that history. Do you think, I'd like to see a college basketball game in Madison Square Garden. I think that's part of it, is that, you know, they do all the college basketball tournaments, like the Big East tournament, when that was a big deal, was there. And then they also do, you know, the boxing and the other stuff. So I think it's just in New York. So they've had really big fights and they have all these college basketball tournaments. Like, as far as I'm aware, TD Garden hasn't had any significant college basketball tournaments or games. I'm sure that somebody's going to tell us that they've had some important game in the tournament at some point, but not like Madison Square Garden.
Well, let me ask this then. Let me say, I don't know what I was going to say, but I hear Rangers games are pretty dope, actually. Those are it. But the TD Garden has the Bruins as well, so I don't know.
Yeah, and I think Boston, to me, seems more like a baseball town.
Well, let me...
You know what I mean? And they, so, obviously, the Yankees are in New York.
Let me ask you this. Do you like Boston or New York better as a city?
I feel like, so this is obviously coming from a kid from Utah, but I felt like New York was just so big that if I was there for longer than a week, I would suffocate with all of the people and the tall buildings every there. I don't like New York as a city very much. It's just too big for me. And Boston, you know, is obviously really, really big. But I know, like, when we went to Boston, we got to go, you know, to Harvard and see some of those things actually outside of Boston. You've got a more open view of the ocean, or at least we did, you know, seeing the harbor, I thought, was a little bit nicer in Boston than New York. So it doesn't feel as claustrophobic as being in, like, Manhattan did. So I would say Boston.
Matt is not a city person, for all those wondering. Matt's not a city guy. Well, Matt, let's go back to basketball for the last five minutes or so. Did not think we were going to talk about the Knicks this much, but here we are. Let's talk about, Matt, what team do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about Boston? You want to talk about Milwaukee, Atlanta, Chicago? Orlando, they're rumored to be trying to trade for DeMar DeRozan as of today, according to Bleacher Report, is where I got that.
That, oh my gosh, I really hope that doesn't happen to DeMar DeRozan. That would just be so sad. He doesn't deserve that.
Let me ask you this, Matt. Well, let's just stick with Boston. We'll stick with the Boston, New York thing. Gordon Hayward, the first 8 games or whatever, having his best season in his 3 years in Boston. And to be fair, the first one, he broke his ankle the first game of the year. The second one, he's recovering from the ankle, so that's not really a huge statement. But it's the best he's looked since his All-Star season in Utah. And then he broke his hand. But the Celtics are still there in first place in the East. They're 8-1. Do you think, let's say the Celtics trade for, let's say Indiana doesn't like the Miles Turner Sabonis pairing at center, Boston gets one of those guys to play center, do you think Boston is a legit contender to beat? I think we both still think it's Milwaukee and Philadelphia are the top teams. Do you think Boston, if they get another big guy, can compete with them?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that season that Gordon Hayward wasn't there and that Kyrie wasn't there. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Celtics went to the Eastern Conference Finals that year.
You were right. And they arguably, I don't want to say they should have beat Cleveland, because if they should have, they would have. But they were game 7 against a very tired LeBron-led Cleveland Cavaliers team.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I look at them like that team was good because of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Those guys are still there. They're missing they've substituted Al Horford for Enes Kanter, and that just is not going to work long term. Al Horford was so good defensively, and he could shoot threes. Enes Kanter is terrible defensively, and as far as I know, he's not really a 3-point shooter. I'm going to look that up on Basketball Reference right now because I'm interested.
He literally
so yeah, and then you also lose. Yeah. And so then you also lose Terry Rozier, who was the starting point guard. I think that becomes problematic. Oh, okay. He has not shot a three-point shot this year. And so I think that doesn't allow that's not going to allow Kemba to get to the basket, as well as, like, say, Al Horford would have. And so, you know, I still think Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown are really good. I think that having three really, really good wings like Brown, Tatum, and Hayward when he comes back, I think that's a really good way to be a good basketball team. But nobody on that team is as good as Giannis, Embiid, or really probably even Simmons with all his deficiencies. So they don't have a better player than either of those teams. I don't think they're as good at shooting threes as the Bucks are, and they're not going to be nearly as good defensively as the Sixers are. So I still think they have deficiencies that's going to make it hard for them to really get over the hump and beat those teams in the playoffs.
Okay. I can dig that. I'm undecided. I'm not sold yet, but I'm more convinced on Boston when Hayward comes back. I don't know if they'll get the one seed, but I think it's going to be more of a three-team race than I thought. Miami's been playing great. I still think they're kind of that third, fourth team in the Eastern Conference. Matt, do you have any closing thoughts before we wrap up? That wasn't the most content we've ever produced, but we did get a lot of thoughts in on the Knicks, which is not where I thought we were going, but it's where we ended up. And, you know, it's all about the journey, not the destination anyways, right?
Yeah, so I just, you know, with talking about the Knicks, I would like to give a public thank you to the Miller family, particularly Larry and Gail for making sure that the Jazz stay here. And also, I feel like they've done a great job of, you know, not only getting out of the way, but working really hard to figure out who are the best basketball minds that they can bring in, and then bringing in people like Dennis Lindsay who are going to be able to do a really good job, and just kind of letting Dennis Lindsay do his thing. So thank you to the Miller family. It's nice to have good owners.
The best owners in sports, you really don't see them unless you're like an active fan. That's why the Rockets, I don't think they're going to work out, because Fertitta keeps trying to just, you know, buy superstars. It's a business, and he has a lot more money than me. So good for him. But I don't think it's going to work out in Houston, because he's not a basketball expert. Daryl Morey's the basketball expert, and he's going to keep trying to get in the way of that. I'm spacing on the head coach, and I hate myself for that. Matt, help me out. Houston head coach.
D'Antoni.
Why did I forget that? I was thinking.
I don't know. Yeah, every once in a while.
You just have those blank moments. But, yeah, I think for Tita's, as long as he's the owner of the Rockets, I think they're going to have problems. So I honestly would put him as the second worst owner behind Dolan in the NBA. And honestly, Michael Jordan's up there in terms of meddling, but he's also Michael Jordan, so he gets more of a pass than other people, and fairly so, I would say.
Yeah, Michael Jordan should be able to do what he wants, particularly because, he's from North Carolina. Also, I feel like the people in North Carolina are more interested in Duke, North Carolina anyway.
Yeah, North Carolina is really a college basketball state. Then I think I'd be interested if the Hornets were better, because they haven't won a playoff series in who knows how long, but we're probably not going to know for a long time what that'll be like if the Hornets were better.
I don't know. Yeah, that would be interesting to see. So it's going to take, like you said, this iteration of the team isn't going to be it, and it's going to take a while for them to develop into something. So,
well, it's been fun. Again, less storyline stuff going on, which led to our little good thing. The Houston Astros were stealing signs. But other than that, got some nice NBA talk in there. Appreciate everybody listening. Again, if you haven't already, subscribe, rate, review. It's on Apple, Spotify, Google, iHeartRadio, anywhere you get your podcast. Stitcher, it's on there. Someone asked me if it's on Stitcher or not, and I honestly don't even know what that is, but we are on Stitcher. Again, let us know what you think. Twitter and Instagram, it's at MJ Double Take. Follow us there. Appreciate everybody, the feedback, all the support. I love getting texts to say, hey, listen to the episode, love the show, whatever. Really means a lot. So appreciate that, and we'll talk to y'all next week.